not able to receive it, but it is given every day. And if we could have the unity to receive it, everything would be fine. I don't know, what do you think about it?
Great sentence to start with. Yes, everything is already being given. Not just the Torah, life in general is already being given, and it's up to us to receive it in simplicity. Just a little example that from life, yes? There is like a pair of shoes that you used to wear for a while, and there's like new pair is waiting because the season is coming, and you see you or someone is wearing his former shoes, but the next or the current is ready, but still everything is being given every day, or like every moment, like every breath, and it's up to us to receive what is given. Sometimes we have attachment to things, and not just to things as, let's say, a pair of shoes or like kitchen utensils or kitchen device. Sometimes we are attached and we are not aware of it in the thought, in the mind, to something which is not existing anymore. So, in a way, we are blocked. Every attachment that we have to idea or to a thing, idea and a thing, it's a thing, it's like a barrier. Object, subject, is preventing this flow. So the Torah is given every day, every moment. Life is living, but it's up to us to receive what there is. It is very simple. Yes, Jill, if you would like to ask something or to write or to say, please feel free. Which brings me to the name of the child that Ruth gave birth. By the way, it's not her son. It is considered to be Naomi's son. The neighbors are saying, Ben Yulad le Naomi, a son is born to Naomi. It's not even Ruth. And the name of the child or the baby is Oved. Oved, it means working. In English, his name is Obed with B. In Hebrew, Oved. And Lohia says something very beautiful. He was named Oved after the first request from Adam. Adam in the Garden of Eden was requested to what? To work. Le'ovda. To work, uleshumra, to work, and to keep it as it is, the Garden of Eden, just to work, yes, and to keep it, to preserve life or nature. But Adam did not do it. Why didn't he do it? The Bible says he was about to control it. So, the intention was that Adam will stay in the garden or live in the garden and will work, not in a mean of getting salary, but working le'ovda is to be in connection with, in relation to. This was the intention, that we, not just Adam, be here in relation to what is happening. To let life move through us. But always there is a default. What is the default? And this is how we program. The default is the tendency, the imminent tendency of trying to control. Trying to control by having a concept. By trying to capture something in the thought. Of course, control is not working, and Adam has to be put to sleep, Yes. And from his side, from a different perspective, not of controlling, comes not a woman, but a consciousness. Not control of the brain, but consciousness comes as being. And then Adam says, this is what Etzem Me'atzmutai, essence of my essence, flesh of my flesh. To this I shall call a woman. Isha. In English, it's a woman. In Hebrew, it's little fire. Isha is little fire, esh, with hay, with five. Ish is fire with a potential of 10. So, returning to Oved, the child that was born to Ruth and Boaz, he was named Oved. To return again to the beginning, what Adam did not do. Adam was trying to control everything. We can see this in our life. There's just bots, yes? And you call like we call for the water bar and just you get, you don't speak to people. You just speak to recorded commands. You speak to electronic, smooth operator. You just speak to the operating system that speaks. If you need this, click 4. If you need this, click 5. If you need click 10. But there's no human behind the system. You just computerize control systems. Whether if you dial, or whether there are bots, if you need assistance, there's no human resource behind this. Everything comes to from the perspective of controlling. Meaning I, let's say as a company, I can hire people who will write a program that seemingly can conceive all mistakes possible in the system. And when we as customers are trying to connect and get help or assistance, the company thinks that her engineers or programmers could conceive any possible scenario in reality. And just the customers had to deal with bots and with recorded operators. But life is so beautiful, and love cannot be conceived. So whatever, good afternoon, Abigail. So whatever the programmers could come up in their mind as possible problem to the system, we used to have a water bar and it broke and you call for days, nobody's there, nobody's answering, there's no even disappeared. So they, in their imminent need to control, they thought that if they will take their great programmers, put a beautiful website with all possible options, scenarios to fix it. You don't have even to call the technician because you can follow through shooting problems and you could, but there's no one there for over a month. Everything broke. We just took a simple kettle and little filter of Brita. This is a German thing, just to filter 2 liters every time. And then just an example from life. This is what happens to Adam. He was asked what? Le'ovda u'le'shomra. Not to work in order to get a fee or reward, but to be in connection, not to block, just to live life as is. And he was trying, and we are trying as well, to control, to conceive every possible scenario. And guess what? It never works. It never works. And the system will break eventually. And this is a great success from the divinity perspective. Because it cannot conceived, life cannot be conceived in the mind or in the brain or in the programmer's plan. Cannot be. Even if you take 10 bots or 10,000 bots or assistants of AI. Even if you take all this assistance, we can never conceive life, how life can come in the moment. Therefore, says Luria, the son of Ruth and Boaz is named Oved, which is bringing us back to Adam in the Garden of Eden. Oved, according to Luria, came to be because Adam was not doing what he's supposed to do, to be in connection. Some people say, yes, I don't want to work. I just want to win the lottery, to have enough money in my account that I never have to be worried about money. Or they want to have an exit, they want to develop an app and get whatever out there and gain enough money not to be able to work, not to be able to bother. But the interesting perspective from the Bible or the biblical perspective of work is completely different. It's not to get a fee or to get us somewhere else on the planet. I get enough money, I can buy a ticket somewhere. No. The working is basically being in connection with what is happening. We are not the workers. Adam was not asked to be worker, like in a factory, to attend what is coming. But we are refusing to be present. We want to control. We want that someone else will do it. Once I was going to a shop to bring something, and there was a conversation between the workers. And they were speaking, what happens if someone lives in a high building and he wants to have a little garden or little flower pots into a very high apartment in the building? And someone says, you know what, you can bring the land or the earth or the pottery, or you can build a garden up there high in the building, but still you have to take care of it, to water the plant, to take care, to see what is happening every day, because there's a change. Life is all the time. So it's not a problem to bring garden, earth, plants on penthouse on 20 floors, building, to locate it. This is not a problem to bring matter, to bring the garden upwards in the building. If you want a garden, to attend a garden. But we like to owe things, to have things but not being there. So Oved, the son of Ruth and Boaz, in a way brings us back to the story of the garden. Oved is named Oved as present, not as a worker in a factory that manufactures, let's say, screws for the war, or just have to wrap them in a box, and not as a worker, but being present in the moment, being there. Here. Go back to the lottery solution. So many people would like to win the lottery, not to have any trouble. Yes, have to wake up, to go somewhere, enough money, not to worry about anything. But now the job or the work is not a thing. It's being in connection with what is happening. Most of the people, they would like to have some kind of an income that will protect them from life. Because work, for many people, is something that you need to go around to bring enough income, salary, that you could roll in life. But the perspective of the Bible of work is completely different. It's not to get something, but this is what is to be in connection with. let's say, there is a book of prayer. In Hebrew, they call it Siddur because there's like how to pray. This is what happens during the time that people lose connection, so they have to have a book of prayer because people lose connection with what is happening. So the name of the book of prayer is called Avodah Shebalev, work in the heart. And what is the work in the heart? Is the prayer. You see, what is the perspective of work? It's not just to rummage, let's say, flower pot from A to B to C to D, but to be present. Not to think for yourself scenarios and somebody's saying something, or let's say there's something on fire, or there's a laundry machine, and then you hear there's a different strange sound in the spinning that the machine did not do before. So what is happening? So Oved, again, or Avodah, or work, is not something that supposed to get us somewhere. It is what it is. It's life. Most of us look at work as a mean to arrive somewhere, a mean to support life and expenses and paying bill. But work, Avodah, is what it is. Therefore, they named the child Oved. Oved. Questions? Abigail, do you have any? Yes, Fernando, yes.
If I may ask a question, I think that the word slave uses the same root, right?
Yes.
As work.
Yes.
So how to think about slavery?
Yes, slavery. Yes, Eved. Very good question. Yes, Eved. Yes, slavery. Presume to. What is we think usually about slavery? I don't know what people think about slaves. When you hear the word slave, what comes to you? Yanis, Jill, Fernando, Abigail, when you hear the word slave, what comes to your mind?
I would think about somebody that is forced to work and needs to respond to a superior, you know, to a sir that owns these people somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. So what comes to you is that there's one who is getting commands all the time and he has to be ready for any call and to do everything. Meaning, what if we can expand to frame what slavery is? It means that too. There's a commander or there's an owner, and at the other end, there is like a slave that has to be ready every moment for a snip of a finger and to do everything. So it is like a binary system. Hi, Rodrigo. Good morning. Yes. Yes. So a slave or slavery, it is basically a binary system. We can summarize it as binary system. There's a commander, there's an owner, landlord, inspector, superior. And in the other side, there's just runner that runs and do errands and so. This is Eved, or slave. But Oved with Vav, Fernando, what is Oved with Vav? What the Vav represents? Oved?
Connection.
Connection.
Or disconnection. It depends.
Yes. 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 Oved. Yes? With the spheres. Yes.
But it so is Oved. Perfect.
Yes. Perfect. Yes.
I understand. Yes.
Yes. Oved. He is not working for someone. He is not working under someone. He is not working to get anything in return. It's just, this is what goes through him is connection. It's like when noticing when a new leaf is coming, whether it's in the tree or in a flower pot at home, just this is what is happening. The sense of slavery comes when we see ourselves outside of the world. And there's two. There's, so to speak, me and the world. And then there's me and the inspector. And there's me and the supervisor. And so. And this is what brings this binary relation. This is, if you look at slavery in its core, it means a binary system. There is a beautiful saying in Hebrew, everyone who buys himself a slave buys himself a master. Again, everyone who buys himself a slave buys himself a master. What does it mean? What does it mean? I will say this in Hebrew. Kol hakone eved, or shortly, hakone eved, the one who buys slave, kone adon, buys a master. By thinking that you own something, someone, what happens? You think this is to be in the tiger's mouth. People think that they buy a slave. So there is themselves and there is the slave. There are two. So everyone who thinks that he buys himself a slave, the thought of having a slave makes him a master, and there are two. And it doesn't matter which one is the master and which one is the slave. It's a binary system. You see? This is a very beautiful example. We speak about non-duality. Neither of those exist. There is no master and there is no slave. Only binary system, only the eyes will give us the sense of master and slave. This is what they say in Hebrew, kol hakone la'atzmo eved, or hakone la'atzmo eved, the one who buys himself a slave, basically buys himself a master. Because the owning, the sense of you think that you have someone as a slave, yes? You are being governed by the thought that you're having a slave. So the one who buys himself a slave buys himself a master. And there isn't any difference between the two. Two. Like policeman and a thief. It's two. There isn't any difference between who is from this side of the bar and who is from the other side of the bar. Moving to a different scene, unless if you have questions. An Aborigine man, Aborigine from Australia, yes, native, was attending a funeral in Australia. And in the occasion of the funeral and of the happening, they presented the picture, the painting of the deceased, a painting made by a painter. And the Aborigine says to this fact that they put a painting of the deceased, he says, where I come from, we don't paint or we don't put a picture of the deceased. Because no picture can represent or show or capture the soul. And by having a painting of the deceased, you just, jail yourself in a form, and the soul is already free. You attach yourself to the idea of the deceased while the soul is already free. We were speaking in the beginning about attachment. Yes, Fernando? Can you hear?
Yes. Just one thing about the about the I am, let's say, about the supreme essence that brings us to unity. In our modern times, since you said about this, about painting and everything, the identity of people nowadays are connected with the social media. You know, I am what people think about me. Usually, or what people see in me. So we play this game in social media, let's say, to enforce a sense of identity that people recognize us, you know. And so nowadays, I think that if this fundamental question, who am I? People are going to ask to ChatGPT, maybe, you know, who am I? And ChatGPT will tell you, you know. I don't know if I made myself clear, but I'm just putting the contrast from this culture that you shared.
Yes, it's a
from our current culture, you know.
It's a form of a new slavery. Social media is a form of slavery. People do not want to look at it. This is a form of slavery. Enslavement. Yes, this is what it is. Like life is a product. Yeah. Men, women, doesn't matter. Babies are used as products by the parents. The parent running like streams of what the baby did and how did he dance and just, and they get likes and it gets them going. And it's a form of slavery because whatever is put there is destined to create any comment, like or dislike. So it presumes too. There's me. This is just psychosis, mass psychosis, social media. It's just when you withdraw yourself from social media, you gain a lot of peace. This is for sure.
It is. Yes. It's a symptom, right?
Yes.
And we can see also in churches, you know, the sacred places.
Mm-hmm.
We used to see a church or a synagogue or whatever, it was like to men to resemble something, to be symbolic, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know if in other countries, but I think that the United States, it happens just like it happens in Brazil. Here we have like new churches now that mm-hmm. looks like a shopping center. It is crazy.
A shopping center? How does it look like? Can you describe?
I never seen.
So okay. I never traveled to see. What is it?
How does it? Well, first of all, it just looks like a store. You know, the building is just like a store,
mm-hmm.
but it is quite cozy to people. Like you can take a coffee and leave your children in the kids' place that has a lot of video games and toys, and you can and the place of cult is like, I don't know, like a cinema with lot of lights and music and everything that you can imagine it. And this is the sacred place.
In the church?
Yes. This is the new churches that we can see here, and people make like
what?
Propaganda of it. Yes. And I see this as a symptom of a society, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are good if you are selling something. So they are selling churches right now. It is... I gonna post... I surely can find on YouTube some mm-hmm. propaganda of this kind of church. And what can I say? It this is the culture, you know.
Mm.
It Hello? Is crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We can.
I was able to pull over for a little while. I just had to get on here and agree with Fernando that definitely that's happening here.
So what is happening? Can you say something? Because please share.
Yes, there are definitely churches here that are, you can shop inside of them. They have playgrounds inside of them. their stages are like performances every time that you come there. They have coffee shops. They have bookstores. There's a lot going on at some of the mega churches here. They still have the smaller churches that you just go in and there's like the chapel and the altar, but a lot of the churches have changed over to be more commercialized, I guess you could say. And mm-hmm. It's like a party every time you go there. And so, it's a lot has changed since I was young.
Isn't it exhausting, Jill, to go to the church and just to spread your attention, coffee, books, playground, play yard? It's opposite.
I've been to a couple of places where if I go there, I might go with a friend in the past, and mm-hmm. I would never go back. You know, there's some places where you have to go through security to get to certain areas. It is kind of exhausting, and it's disheartening, because you should be able to just, if the way that it was intended, go there to, I guess, meet with God. That was the purpose. But now it's just to go there just to kind of socialize, and it is exhausting. It's sad, I think.
Thank you for sharing. When we visited, yes, Jill?
I just wanted to add, but I also understand that these are businesses, and that's kind of what they don't tell you. A lot of people don't understand that they have become they're like businesses. It's not so that call themselves a church. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, like a theme park or something.
So who is behind it, Jill? Who is behind the who comes with it, with this idea, who's behind it? Because for the customers, for the people, for the public, it's a place to buy books or to chill with the children, but who comes with it?
I would think that it's a way to get people who don't normally come to church, a way to get a different group of people to come. And mm-hmm. and mega churches make massive amounts of money. Like, we literally, they live in mansions, they fly jets and that they own and drive the most expensive cars. And so it's a lifestyle. And so I think it's a way to generate income, and they are trying to reach out to different people inside the community who are interested in that type of lifestyle as well.
Well, there's basically economical power behind it, just
yes.
business interest behind it. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, Fernando?
Just if you are a church, you do not pay taxes, you know?
I didn't know that.
Yes. So if you have like a shopping center that is a church, you do not pay taxes. And so it is just like you said, you enter and has fancy cars and, you know, they put the climate as we are brothers. So you can think like people that do not have possessions go to these places and think, oh, I am brother of this man that has a Lamborghini and this is my priest, you know. So it is crazy, it is insane. But just putting a symptom of our society nowadays, you know.
I've noticed it's great that you share this. I noticed that there's like, let's say, a boulevard away, there was a synagogue that used to be, like, people used to come and to pray there. And during the times, they built another hall and then they brought the children. Just in the beginning, they built it just to host meals of Brit Milah and Bar Mitzvah and just weddings. But during the time, it became to be a babysitter service. Because people have children and they have to, let's say, to take care of them, and the parents are working many hours, so they park the children in this hall that intentionally was just for Bar Mitzvah, Brit, and wedding. So, and then they also became like a McDonald's. So they celebrate birthdays and bring cakes and clowns. Because at the next wall, there's a synagogue, and the synagogue is like open 3 times per day for prayer. So there's always someone there in the morning, noon, or evening. So for the parents, it's a great arrangement because they put the children, they have their, let's say, the children interest is covered. But also there's like grannies which are attending the prayers. So there's always someone which is there. So it became, like we say in Hebrew, mishmash, a combo of babysitter, McDonald's, party, clowns, and prayers for the elderly generation. So it's not that as commercialized in America, but I guess it's the same. It's just... it's a different version, but it just time leaks. Time leaks. What people need is like babysitter services. They need place to or space to celebrate birthdays and protected area for the children. So why not next to the grannies? So it's like this is what life brings about. Arrangement. we are listening to some conversations, and today we received a message that in one of the New Jersey churches, they have like, they also speak for people who have alcohol problems. So they host those conversations in a church. In Europe, the churches are empty, and some of them, because they're ancient and really, how do you say, to maintain them takes a lot of money. So nobody comes to pray. So they convert them, and people can take yoga lessons because it's a space. So yes, and they don't want that the building will be empty and unattended, because it's not a nice feeling, that emptiness. Or so they open it as yoga centers, and sometimes they open it as a concert hall for people to come and play music, like live music. Yes, this is what comes with time. Life cannot be conceived. What used to be in former generation could be conceived as a chapel, as a church, as a religion concept. It doesn't work today. So what is left is the building, let's say it's a church or the chapel. But life is moving and streaming all the time. There is no concept that can conceive life. We cannot speak about life. By speaking about life, we are narrowing it down. Doesn't matter who says what says. And this is a beautiful example for it. The river streams. Once we were in Vienna, and I would like in that time to participate in like evening prayer, Friday evening prayer. And in Vienna, there's like the city is divided into quarters, and the inner, the most ancient quarter, there's also a synagogue there that was destroyed in the Second World War and rebuilt. And so innocently I said, why not? Let's go and see. And you know, Shabbat prayer, it's Friday evening. So, but before the prayer, you have to go through security, because synagogues in Austria and Germany after the Second World War are being guarded with a lot of forces. I mean, all kinds of policemen. And so I thought naturally that there are guards, and it's okay, so it's like you say, okay, naturally guards, not everyone can come. I thought, what could be wrong? Because also in Israel, there are many guards all over the place, not next to synagogue, but because of terrorist activity in every mall, in every supermarket, I said to myself, what can it be? So I was there, it was like about sunset, because the evening prayer is next to sunset. It's a nice atmosphere outside in nature, but then you come, and with me were a couple from Britain. She was an architect, he was a lawyer, and two men, midlife in this stage. And the guards at the gate of the synagogue were interrogating, not just checking if you have something like a knife, a weapon, or are you armed, the casual thing. They were interrogating. How do I know the details about the others? Because they were interrogating them into details just to be able to cross the door to enter the hall, not to mention enter the synagogue. And I was so shocked. I was so shocked. Why are you coming here? Where are you come from? Which almost ask them what is the number of the shoe, or which flight they came to Vienna. Why do you have interest if you from England. What are you doing here in Vienna at the synagogue? For what reason? What brought you here? And I looked at this couple in front of me and I asked myself, what is going on here? You see? This is nothing has to do with religion or belief. This is just a mechanism of institutional thinking. They almost put them with the back. The guards supposed to guard the people who come to pray from any kind of terrorist activity. But what they do, they cause terror to those who come seemingly to pray because they are from another country, from another state, they happen to be here. So it's innocently they say, okay, this is the atmosphere to pray with others. Many people like to share the space with others in intimacy. So I was so shocked. I was so shocked. And I never returned there. Never, never. Never. The most scary spaces is those who have guards on them and they have some kind of a concept what life is about. Those dangerous places. It was scary. It's opposite, like Fernando was saying, like Jill was saying, but you come to be in intimacy with others, to share those like few moments before the Shabbat is coming, or just the movement from 6 days of the week to the resting day, and it just opposites itself. It becomes like inquisition and torture and fear and anxiety. So what for? What for? Nature as itself, stand next to a tree or stand or walk or sing or whatever. Why do you need an institution, a house, a community? Interesting. They were asking them for the passport, to see the passport, to see the ideas. It was so, so scary. But you're innocent. You just just go. Let's do. Let's what? What can you know? What can be wrong? Just innocently. Let's go and pray in community. They say something beautiful about community in the Talmud, or I think it's there, that there is in the Hebrew tradition there is a sense of 10 people together. This is a complete community. They call it minyan, minyan, or minyan. They call it. So every prayer should consist of at least 10. But when one is present, like Oved, we don't need 10 because there's presence. Do you understand the difference? Do you? Fernando, Yanis, Abigail, Jill, Rodrigo. Do you understand the difference between community of 10 and presence? If not, I can explain. Can you hear? Do you get a sound coming? Yes, yeah, so you have a sound. Have you heard before that there is a sense, or regardless of Hebrew tradition or so, there's assembly of people, community. Have you heard the word community before in English, in any other languages, community? Yes. So in Hebrew, they have a sense of at least 10. 10 together is community. They call it minyan. At least 10, if you have 10, it's called minyan, yes? Minyan. So the minimum of community, the minimum, is 10 people. So far, so good. Okay. So any prayer should at least contain 10 people. So far, so good. So this is understood. But when one is present, there is no need of 10 because there's presence. Is it understood, Fernando? Yes? Can you speak, Fernando? Yanis, Jill, Abigail, can you unmute and speak? That would be just wonderful. Yes?
Hello?
Jill. Yes, okay. Hello?
Okay, I'm sorry. Was you talking about the understanding about the community of 10?
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind of like an assembly?
Yes.
An assembly?
Yes.
Okay, so here, yes. like a church would be called an assembly.
Yes, yes, a beautiful word, very beautiful word. Yes, mm-hmm. Assembly.
Yes,
yes. The minimum assembly is like 10. Yes.
Okay. So yes. That's like what used to be here was a small congregation or a small church.
Yes.
They would call it an assembly of
people. Yes. Yes. Assembly. Very well. It's a good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when one is present, yes. Is everything is in one? Yes?
Yes, I agree.
So there is a need of a little church or assembly because people are scattered, so they need to come 10 people together in one space. But when one is present, there is no need to in assembly of others because he is present. Assembly of being, yes, Yanis, yes, very well, very well. There is a word that little temple. Yes, after the temple was destroyed, there was a need for people again. Being assembly, so the term of Hebrew is little temple, Mikdash Me'at, little temple. It's funny when people are, yes, Jill, yes, please.
When I was growing up, then all the churches were small churches. And so you could go there and you could feel like if you were having an issue in your life or you just needed some direction or some clarity, you could mm-hmm. go there. And even if there wasn't like a pastor or somebody there, you could still just go there and you could sit and feel grounded. Over time, the churches start to grow so much that sometimes you could be in a church. We were actually in a church before. We were there for a year. Some of the people in the congregation would just like, I would disappear. Some of them would even pass away. And because nobody had relationship, I'm sorry, I'm outside. Because nobody would have relationship, then they would just be lost. And they would be even more alone and more just confused. After spending so much time, I think that the churches got so big they forgot about the people and what they needed. And so it's been difficult.
Yes. Again. Hello, can you hear now? So it seems that there's a token and time is moving and the token is gone. I noticed this also with the previous session. The token is gone and there is a need to renew it. So did you hear? I was just saying one sentence about university as well. The university was established to give people service of education and to widen their horizons and to keep the community open to the world. But during the time, the university is just becomes narrow and serves its own interests and intrigues. And the students, they are just left aside or left along the road, so to speak. So it's the same behavior in the church or in university. It's the same. And there's a beautiful Greek mythology about the time that swallows its children. You remember, Fernando? Cronus, the time that swallows his children, so to speak. This is what happens in time. This is the law of time. This is the gravitation of self-interest and intention. So it's the same. And with this beautiful message of Ovid, of being present, I would like to thank each and every one of you for being present here today and wish you a wonderful week and hope to see you soon on Monday. Have a beautiful voyage, Fernando, the children, the happenings around, the granddaughter, Jill, the community around, the friends. Beautiful life and see you soon. Toda and shalom.